Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This week's show was taped on Tuesday, and I'll be playing that shortly. Next week, Wayne Bryan will be with us, and he'll be discussing parenting, pursuit of excellence, and it will be a call to action for American tennis. The general appeal of the show can make a great promotional tool for you and your programs, or a free gift to your friends who will thank you for extending that offer to them. If you would like me to send you the link to next week's show, I'd love to do that. Then you can share it, tweet it, email it, post it on the website, or include it in newsletters. I think it's going to be a very important show. And I was also very grateful to have had this next guest on. So here we go. On to the show.
Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
I'm your host, Bill Patton. What is Infinite Tennis? Infinite Tennis is a completely unrehearsed, unscripted conversation with a new friend of the game. Today's guest is Alistair McCaw, who has trained some number ones in multiple sports along with Olympic athletes and is currently training Bernard Pomich. And I guess I'll get the real pronunciation of his name coming up here in a little bit. But very interested to talk to Alistair because he is one of the foremost authorities on training top athletes, and I think everyone here is going to learn something new about higher levels of fitness for their game. So we're going to come away with a commercial here, and then when we come back, we're going to bring Alistair onto the show.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. And Alistair, hello, are you there? Okay, let me see here. I think we might have him on mute. So bear with me a moment. Do you believe we've got him here? All right. Okay, Alistair, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Bill. Can you hear me? Oh, yes, I can. Very well. Excellent. So, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I am curious a little bit about you. Where are you from originally, and how did you get into the training game?
Well, long story, Bill. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It's really an honor to chat to you. Long story. I was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and immigrated to South Africa when I was six, and was educated in South Africa, and then at the age of 18, 19, started to travel a lot. I was a professional triathlete, which is swimming, cycling, and running, and started to travel the world as an athlete myself. Before that, I was a decent junior tennis player, ranked in the top 15 in the under-14s and under-12s without a coach. I was brought up in a family with not a lot of money, so we couldn't afford a coach. And sometimes I'd even have to borrow tennis rackets and use balls that even your dog wouldn't want to, chew around the garden. But always loved tennis and always had a real passion for it, wanted to be the best. I remember growing up in South Africa as a young kid, 11, 12, and going to go watch guys like Brad Gilbert and Pat Cash when they came out to play the South African Open before the sanctions and everything. So, tennis has always been my number one passion.
Yeah, that's great. I wasn't sure where you were from. Actually, little something you should know about me is that my family were known as the Ulster Scots, and were supposed to go to Ulster to help quell some rebellion there, but then became known as the biggest troublemakers of all, and then be sent to the New World. So.
Wow, it's a small world because I was just chatting to Rory McIlroy, who obviously is Caroline's boyfriend, Caroline Wozniacki, and Rory's also an Ulster man, so we always have a lot to talk about, and we have decent rugby teams over there as well. So small world.
My family ended up in California after quite a travel, but anyway. That's very interesting background, and it's similar to Johan Kriek because Johan was born into a farming family, and they were lucky enough to have a concrete tennis court where he played all day and all night. So that's interesting similarity there too. So let's talk about.
Bill, you're just making me smile because you're just mentioning, one of my heroes in the game, Johan Kriek, and not a lot of people know about him as much as, say, a McEnroe Connors or whatever, but, Johan, two-time Australian Open champion, and actually just ran into him now in New York at the U.S. Open and with his wife, and just it was the first time I'd met him, and what a super guy, what a friendly, humble guy, just a real champion.
Before we go too off on that, I just want to give you an anecdote. He came on my show, and he was kind of running through a list of his accomplishments, and he very matter-of-factly said, and I beat Guillermo Vilas in the quarterfinals of the French Open, and then I did this, and I was like, wait, hold on a second, we have to talk about that. So there was a whole story about that. I mean, Rafa beat Vilas's all-time clay court winning streak, So Vilas was ruling the clay. Anyway, we're already on a tangent. Let's come back and let's talk about training, okay? So,
sure.
in the early part, we were talking about two different segments of tennis. I mean, there's the recreational tennis player, and tennis players are notoriously poorly trained. What's a way that a recreational tennis player can begin to take their fitness more seriously so they can perform better and have fewer injuries?
Well, Bill, I always get back to that saying of, don't play to get fit to play. And that's one of the main reasons why a lot of recreational players get injured is because, you know, they're basically playing to get fit, and they're going from basically sometimes nothing to running around chasing a furry little yellow ball around the court. And, you know, that's one area I try and, preach when I speak about fitness and conditioning for recreational players is first of all, build up a little bit of fitness. You know, do a little bit of strength training and shoulder work and a little bit of leg work, you know, before you get on the court and start going into movements and positions that you're not quite used to. You know, the number one thing as well is flexibility, stretching before you play and a cool down stretch after you play. Those are the little nuts and bolts that are just holding the body together. So, you know, you don't see people doing that enough, and that's one of the main reasons why we're seeing, you know, unfortunate little injuries like shoulder tears and rotator cuff injuries and knee and ankle injuries.
Yeah. Well, and that's great, and I think that's enough of an answer, because if it was too complicated, then it becomes daunting. But, hey, so
exactly.
All you weekend warriors, you know, go through a 10-15 minute stretching routine beforehand and afterwards, you know, because otherwise you're going to tighten up after having played. All right, so now let's take it up a notch, and you have now the wannabe competitor who's trying to make a move, but they might not have all the complete information. What's one of the missing pieces of, say, a competitive junior who's coming up and they outside of flexibility, what's one piece that you're missing?
Well, definitely, you know, the game is getting more and more physical. So movement is definitely one area that needs to be taken more seriously. You know, you hear a lot of people talking about it. You know, the kid's got to improve his footwork. He's got to improve his movement. But you never really see anything done about it. You know, you might see some live ball drills, the coach feeding some balls and the kid running side to side. But specific footwork, specific movement, teaching the patterns of the game. You know, the game is 80% lateral, but you're seeing a lot of these physical trainers and fitness trainers doing mostly linear work, forward and backwards. And, you know, as you know, the game has become mostly a baseline game right now, the singles, of course. So, you know, getting back to your question of, you know, stepping it up to now the more competitive level, I would say definitely movement is training-specific movement, because that's where the game is right now.
So, okay, so that's a great starting point. And, you know, one thing that I train my players with the idea is that you have three axes of rotation. You're either going to rotate off of your front foot, the front half of your body, or you're going to rotate from your core and your spine inside your cylinder, so to speak. And then more and more often you're seeing that diagonal backwards movement where now you're rotating off of your back foot and
Correct.
Doing, you know, 150 degrees of rotation or more. So can you speak to that from a training standpoint of developing those different axes of rotation?
Absolutely. You know, it's about training the body in a functional fashion. I keep my athletes off training on machines, you know, because movement is about, you know, different patterns and different angles and rotations and so on and so forth. So really I try to have my athletes work in as much free movement as possible and in a standing position, because that's what you're going to be doing on the court when you're playing, is you are going to be required to have strength and better movement while you're standing up. You know, I can never understand why trainers are putting athletes or clients on machines in fixed movements when 80% of the body is rotational. So, and as you know, even a serve is an incredible movement where the torque and the rotation and the knee bend and the, you know, the kinetic chain all working together is it's crucial that you're training the body in a functional way with diverse movements and patterns.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's been a lot of fascination with the P90X or whatever it's called, and they use the concept of muscle confusion, right? So that your body's more often in a state of growth. And so, what are some exercises that you use that kind of bring these different movements in different directions? What would be something you did?
Well, working with free weights or free movement equipment like medicine balls, physio balls, dumbbells, tubes, bands, all these types of things are going to help the athlete move into tennis-specific positions and diverse positions. Twists from example, bending the knees down to left ankle, bringing the body up and turning up to right side shoulder. These type of twisting exercises, which are going to strengthen the body in a transverse fashion. Lunging instead of just a normal lunge, yeah. have a lunge and a rotational twist with a medicine ball, for example. Teaching the body to stabilize in the legs and mobilize in the core. These are the type of exercises I'm working with my athletes, and the results have been pretty good.
Okay, so you used two words there that could be considered buzzwords, and for those who are not initiated in the use of the word stabilize and mobilize, so. If you could break down stability and mobilization for people that might not be aware of what those are.
Well, basically, there's certain areas in the body that you want to be more stable, and areas where you want to be more mobile. And mobility is basically also rotation. So, for example, a player running laterally to a ball will have to, let's say they're running to their forehand. On the right-hand side of the court, they're gonna have to stop with that right leg, and that hip, and right side of the core is gonna have to stabilize. For example, so it's gonna stop instead of falling over to the side. The mobility part of that shot is obviously them now gonna be rotating, and hitting the ball and falling through. There's gonna be that mobility. So you've got like stability from the hips down, in the legs, keeping the body still. From falling over to the side, and then you've got mobility in the upper body, rotating and hitting through. So that's a pretty good example of, stability and mobility in one movement, so to say.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I appreciate that. Hey, let's go to a commercial, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit about Bernard Tomic, and you can tell me how to say his name. And
sure.
for anybody who's interested, we're not going to talk about any of the personal life stuff. So if you're only going to listen for that, then you're going to be disappointed. So we're going to have a commercial. Right back.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike Tennis Camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike Tennis Camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike Tennis Camps and take your game to the next level.
All right, very good. So, I happen to be a fan of Bernard. And so can you have you say his name?
Depends on part of the world you're in. If Eastern Europe, it's Tomic. Obviously with the Serbian Croatian pronunciation of the IC at the end. So, the same goes with also another player I work with, Marijana Lucic. And here in the United States, it's Marijana Lucic. Or Luke Kick, should I say. But, it's Tomic in his home in Serbia and Croatia, where he's from, and it's Tomek, usually in Australia and the United States.
Okay. So, yeah, it kind of depends on...
Sorry to confuse the matter there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Anyway, so, I think some people are rooting for him because they've heard about, the drama, and they're kind of hoping that all that ends and he just fulfills his potential. So how long have you been training him, and what's that like?
Well, I've known Bernard for a while, probably for about 5-6 years when he was, on the junior circuit. I started with him about, 4 weeks before the U.S. Open for the U.S. series, and worked with him in the build-up to the U.S. Open. Bernard's one hell of a talented guy. You can pull out any ball, be it a football, a rugby ball, soccer ball, whatever, and he's going to do magic with it. So, he's a very, very easy guy to work with and very athletic. So, as a trainer, it's a pleasure to work with a guy where, he's very advanced in his physical abilities and his athletic skills and coordination. He loves to play his games, and he's one heck of a competitive guy. We played a lot of basketball in the last 4 weeks as well, which is a fantastic sport for movement and footwork. So I was super happy to hear that he loves his basketball.
Yeah, that's good. So now, I hear a lot of questions about his style of play and how maybe his athleticism doesn't match up with his style of play, playing so far behind the baseline. I mean, is he cognizant of that? Is he stubborn about that? Is he making changes to his game to utilize his athleticism differently?
I think what some people fail to understand, is watching tennis on TV as well can give you a misperception of the depth, etc. I mean, you're playing some guys that are hitting a very, very heavy ball. So if you're not comfortable taking it early, like Agassi used to, then you're going to stand a lot deeper. It also gives him a little bit more time as well to choose the shot he wants to hit. So, I mean, that's his style of play. It's worked for him. He's a very talented guy. Unbelievable hands as well. I mean, just how he can decelerate and just change speeds. I rate him right up there in the top 3 or 4 in the world and how he does that. But, there's a few things. He enjoys playing like that. People say you should step up to the line a little bit more, but he's a tall guy as well. He's 6'4", so it's not always easy to get in the legs for a 2-3-hour match and counterpunch, so to say. So, his style suits him, and he feels comfortable with that.
Yeah, so we shouldn't look for any changes, no matter what the pundits might be saying. He's probably going to continue playing that way because that's his comfort zone.
Well, he's one heck of a talented guy. So he does change his depth depending on the player you're playing. When you're playing a guy like Seppi or someone that's really mixing it up a lot, short balls, deep balls, he's going to stand it a little bit more. When you're playing a guy like Rafa, or Del Potro, or he hitting a lot heavier and deeper, then it's very, very tough to stand up to the line. And if you're not comfortable with taking it early, you're going to stand deeper and have a little bit more time. That's one of the advantages as well, I think, of playing on the professional tour is that the courts are a lot bigger and the distance between the baseline and the back wall is a lot more than, for example, your traditional club court or recreational court. So, you get away with that aspect playing at the pro level.
Yeah, I know that one thing that's become frustrating for me as somebody who's almost 50 is playing young people and then having to run back and scrape my racket against the back fence to get some of these top spin shots. No, it's really not fun. I actually really don't want to play somebody who's hitting all that topspin because it's just not as fun for me as it was when I was younger. So now, when it comes now, let's talk about the pro game. And you've had some number ones in the world that you've worked with in tennis and other sports. Is that right?
Sorry, Bill. Can you repeat that question? I just lost half of it there.
So you've had some players who've been number one in the world in tennis and other sports also?
Correct. I've had a world champion triathlete, a few other athletes, cyclists, runners in their age group as well as actually right today she's 7 years world number one in squash, Nicole David of Malaysia. So, and of course, David Palmer as well, who was number one in the world in squash and two-time world champion. So, yep.
So, who are some of the other notable tennis players that you've worked with in the past?
Svetlana Kuznetsova, U.S. Open and French Open former champion. Dinara Safina, world number one. Kiveta Peshka, who won Wimbledon doubles 2 years ago and was world number one. Marjana Lucic, Jelena Dokic, Xavier Melis, Alex Bogomolov Jr. There's a few more, but those are a few.
Okay, so now with that group, are there any commonalities to kind of the starting place that you have with each one? Do they have similar issues, or is it really case by case?
Oh, I tell you, every athlete is different. You know, it might be the same sport, but every athlete comes with a different history, different background, different beliefs, different style of play. So it's so diverse. And, you know, one of the keys of a good coach is getting to know the athlete, getting to know what makes them tick, what motivates them, and tapping into that. You know, it really is all about the athlete, not about the coach in this respect. So, you know, same sport, but different personalities altogether. But one thing they all have common is they're extremely competitive. You know, you sit down for a card game or a game of ping pong, and boy, they just want to beat you badly.
Yeah, you know, it's been said that surgeons and serial killers have very similar personality traits, but they just differ in altruism, and I believe that trainers are also sort of similar. You know that. You really do have to want to kind of cut somebody open, but do it for their own good, right?
Absolutely, and that's where, you know, one of the things I'm learning more and more as I train athletes and I'm involved in the coaching industry is learning to listen more than talk. And I think that's one of the keys that a lot of coaches are missing is that they feel they have to fill the gap. They have to be talking all the time. They have to be saying something. And you know, sometimes the answers you're looking for are actually just in stopping and listening to what the athlete or that client is saying and taking it in. So, you know, for me, when I work with a new athlete, you know, I might know them from the tour. You know, you pass them in the locker room or in the hallway and say hi and bye. You know, that's one of the first goals, probably the first 2-3 months, is just learning about the athlete, learning what makes them tick, you know, how they – are they morning people, afternoon people? What do they like? What don't they like? You know what I mean? And you've got to just discover that and learn that. It's a relationship, you know?
Well, and yeah, and that's so generally true about success in life, isn't it? So, I mean,
absolutely,
that's really a great thing. And sadly, so many people miss out on that whole thing. I think that's one of the... You know, one of the things that's emerging from this show that I have here is the friendship thing, and that's why I have that crazy show. In about 90 seconds here, the so-called live portion of the show is going to end, but then the rest of it's going to go the rest of the podcast, so there's no worries there. But anyway, so many people miss out on... on the friendships that they could have and the great relationships because they're too competitive and they themselves off from getting to know their competitors. So I guess that's just my comment, but moving on. So now how about this? Without mentioning the name of the player, can you kind of give a case of where maybe there was an injury that had to be overcome or there was a lapse of motivation that needed to be addressed or something along those lines? Hello?
Hi, Bill. Sorry, I didn't get that last part of the question. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, if you could speak to, and don't mention any names, without mentioning any names, can you give kind of a case where there was an injury or the player maybe had some motivational problems or some kind of difficulty that then there was a really nice solution?
You know, sometimes it's time away from the court, you know, and doing the things they want to do. Sometimes they're physically and mentally exhausted. You know, they need a break completely from tennis. And, you know, sometimes, you know, just that encouragement to push through and, you know, one or two wins can give them that confidence and motivation again. You know, mostly lack of motivation and loss of confidence is from, you know, a few losses and, you know, thinking that you've lost your game in a way. So, you know, it's just rebuilding that, and that's the key to, again, listening to the athlete and, you know, hearing what they're saying instead of you as a coach saying, right, you should be doing this or you should be doing that. You know, and everybody, again, everybody works differently. They're motivated by different things. So, you know, again, one of the key things is getting to know the athlete. What's going to make them tick? What do they need for that specific moment? So, you know, it is a challenge, but once they get those two or three wins in a row under their belt, they're feeling good and confident again. So, you know, that old saying, success motivates, and it's so true.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's funny, I'm not really the workout beast that I used to be, and every once in a while I have to tell myself that the bike is not going to ride itself, and the weights
right.
are not going to lift themselves, you know, as much as I might lay on the couch and wish for them to do that.
You know, Phil, this is the thing as well, is that these days, sorry to cut in there, but, you know,
no, that's good.
these strength equipment companies are bringing out these machines where they're almost doing everything for you, and again, pulling away the functional ability and away from the human being, you know, where there's more injuries coming in because they're just being fixed on certain patterns on a machine, for example. So, you know, again, one of the reasons in my McCall method is to work without machines as much as possible and just promote free movement and functional movement training.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that. So can you flesh out a little bit more about what the McCall method means? Because, you just alluded to it there, and I did want to ask you about that. So,
well, I mean, the McCall method is, you know, a method I've put together through years of lots of mistakes and you know, some success thrown in there as well. But obviously the athletes I've worked with have been able to achieve great success. But, you know, just seeing what's worked and what hasn't worked over all the years and putting together what's really specifically needed for the athlete. So, for an example, again, 80% of the body is rotational. So I focus on a lot of rotational movement, transverse, planes, diagonal type of exercises, all these types of things. That's just creating more flexibility and mobility in the body. Most of the injuries usually happen from a tightness in the body. So, you know, these are things that you know, cause one of the main problems. So, unilateral exercises as well, single leg squats, working on half foam rollers to yep, absolutely, working on your balance. It challenges your core stability and works on ankle stabilization and hip stabilization. So those are just some of the little things in the exercises of the McCall method that I use.
Do you ever use the TRX?
I don't use it, but, you know, it's not a bad piece of equipment, but it's not something I specifically use.
Okay, yeah, because it's something that I've become, I've been using quite often, and it's been very helpful to me. I think it's especially good for somebody coming off an injury and or people who are undertrained, because you can really, you can modify the exercises very well because it's based on your body weight, you know, and yeah, it's something you might want to look into, because it's I would say that I want to use that much more than I want to lift weights, even free weights, because also there are a lot of functional strength exercises that you can do. So all right, now we're getting towards the end here, but what advice would you give to coaches or parents or players as they're developing their game and they're wanting to try to get a Division I scholarship or possibly play pro tennis? What advice would you give?
I think one of the number one advices would be to, you know, focus on your strengths. That doesn't mean completely ignore your weaknesses, but practice your strengths more. You know, if your forehand is your strength, then, you know, have your coach feed you more balls to your, you know, have drills every day that incorporate your strengths, working on your strengths. Don't just feel they're your strengths and then leave them out and only work on your weaknesses because, your weaknesses need to get better. So I would say, you know, at least 25%, 30% of your workout should incorporate always your strengths, your favorite shot as well. Always work on your favorite shot every single practice, because, you know, those are the ones that are paying the bills, so to say, and making the dollars are your strengths. And then obviously, you know, working on your weaknesses, but don't spend the majority of your time working on your weaknesses, because you're always going to have weaknesses in your game. But it's your strengths that are going to make you a better player. So definitely focus on those. From a physical point of view, get the legs strong. The sport is about running, and it's about small steps and stopping, accelerating, decelerating, a lot of work in the legs as well. So, you know, get those strong. Those are one of the keys. You'll always remember Agassi and these guys, you know, or Andre mentions in the book, you know, you had to have strong legs, and those are one of the keys. So, to summarize, work on your strengths every day, maximize them, and physically definitely get the legs stronger. You know, that's one of the keys. You'll see these guys that go far into the Grand Slams. It's not just about their strokes and their mindset. They've also got a strong pair of wheels on them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are people that get by with strokes that I would call them inefficient, but they get by because they've developed their athleticism so much. And then conversely, you have people out there who have nearly flawless strokes, but their physical plant, you know, breaks down, and then they can't win a tough match. So
yep, exactly. Yep. Absolutely, Bill. You're spot on there. So, those are the keys. Your strengths and getting the legs stronger, you know.
Okay, so, I think we're getting close to the end here. So if you had to summarize what we talked about here and really break it down into, you know, two or three points, what would be the two or three points you'd really like to drive home with our audience here today?
One of the things I didn't mention in the McCall method as well was obviously just how important the mindset is and staying positive. One of the main differences I've seen in the great players, or the players that reach, for example, the top 100 in the world, 50, is that they're able to handle pressure better. They're able to stay positive in pressure situations. Another area is, you know, you're not going to play the way you want to play every day. It's impossible. Not even Federer and Nadal, these guys can play the way they want every day. So accepting that you're not going to play great every day, and you know, you don't have to play, you know, exceptional tennis to win. You just have to play better than the other guy and figure that out. So, you know, losing your temper and being negative, and, you know, that's just going to break your chances of progressing, you know. So that's one area definitely that I try and drive home with my athletes is, you know, staying positive no matter what the score is. Secondly, you know, stretching a lot, staying flexible. A lot of injuries happen from poor flexibility and poor stretching. So that's one area. No matter what age you are, what level, that's an important area. And the most important thing of all is the reason why you play the game, to have fun and enjoy it, have a laugh and just enjoy the game. We live in a beautiful, there's some beautiful places in the United States, and especially in California and Florida where tennis is big, and get out there and just enjoy the weather and enjoy the companionship.
You know, that's funny, and you got to indulge me for a second because I have a story about that. I had a high school team that I was coaching, and we were the 9 seeds, and we beat the 8 seeds, so that won us the right to be able to go play the number 1 seed. So I'm thinking that, you know, it's probably just as likely that we're going to lose 7-0 in this match that any other score is going to happen. But, you know, I always believe in my team, and you never know what can happen. But we get to Tiburon, California, and I don't know if you've ever been to Tiburon, but it's north of San Francisco in Marin County. It's one of the most beautiful places on planet Earth, and we're playing this team at a club on the Tiburon Bay. So right. I take my kids around the corner and I say, hey, whatever happens in this match, just look around you and realize that people come from all over the world to live here because it's so beautiful.
Exactly.
So, you know, and I've got these, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids looking at me like, coach, you're really an idiot, you know. I'm like, no, you know what? drink it in, because whether we win or lose this match, you remember that you were here and that it was beautiful. Maybe not today. So anyway, what happens? These kids go out and they just play lights out, and we beat them by the narrowest of margins.
Super.
And it was
good work, coach.
I was shocked. I mean, in the concluding moments of that, I was stunned. I didn't know whether to sit down, stand up, go to the bathroom, get a drink of water, talk, not talk. It was crazy. You know, this one
kid.
That's
great coaching. That's great coaching, because we all think coaching should be about the X's and the O's, and sometimes just exactly what you did there, Bill. Guys, have a look. Enjoy the scenery around you and enjoy the people you're with. And, you know, sometimes that's enough just to take that pressure off the player and the team and just enjoy what you're doing. So that's great coaching. You know, again, it's not about the X's and O's. It's about enjoying it and just maximizing your athletic ability and potential, no matter what age you may be.
You know what? Thank you very much for that, for two reasons. Because, one, I appreciate the compliment. And, two, I think it makes a really nice wrap on this episode on the show. So if people want to contact you, how can they reach out to you?
Well, I've got my Facebook page, which is the McCall Method, MCCAW Method. And, you know, if they want to shoot me an email as well, that's fine. It's McCallMethod@AOL.com. And they're always welcome to send me a message, and also just join me on my Facebook, which, you know, I provide posts on tips on exercises, recovery, nutrition, and, you know, some things from the professional players as well. So it's an exciting and interesting page.
Well, great. I hope that people will contact you, and that something good happens to you for that. I really appreciate your time to be on the show, And who knows, maybe we'll run into each other in the tennis world someday.
Sounds great, Bill. I really appreciate being on your show, and you're doing a great job as well. So thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. So, wow, that was terrific for Alistair to come on the show. And as you may be aware, you can email me at infinitetennis8@gmail.com. infinitetennis8@gmail, or same handle at Twitter. Okay, so you can also find me in the 510 and the 925 if you'd like lessons, and I'm definitely going to go out and do some transverse exercises today, and I'm going to make sure that all my players get a chance to have some stability and some mobility. All right, so that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and as is my custom, I will leave you with this.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.